Hi, my name is Steve Elziga, and again, we're in the Coaching Basics Part 2 class, where I'm trying to teach how as a coach you can be more directive. We talked in the first class about how coaching is non-directive, and now I'm actually contradicting some of that by saying you can be directive. But in the last few sessions, we've been looking at ways that you can be a little more non-directive in the directive style of coaching, hence calling it semi-directive. So in this session, we're going to look at how we can make the directive more non-directive by using challenge and encouragement. Challenge and encouragement. Hebrews chapter 10, 24, 25, two of my favorite verses in the Bible. Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Now, the word spur, at least in the English language, is the word or the thing that we use when a cowboy wants to get going on a horse. We attach these things we call spurs, the little steel pointy things. And when the cowboy wants the horse to run, they poke or spur the horse, and then the horse starts galloping. And so Paul here, or the author of Hebrews, we're not sure who wrote Hebrews, is talking about, how do you help someone towards a specific goal by spurring them, by, I guess, a more less aggressive word would be challenge. You challenge someone. When you challenge someone who's walking and you're challenging them to run, you're like, come on, let's go. So let us consider how we may spur or challenge one another on toward love and good deeds. Let's not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage by encouraging one another. And all the more as you see the day approaching. So on the one hand, you have challenge. And on the other hand, you have encouraging. And these really are the two basic ways that we motivate. That as parents, we motivate our children. Sometimes we challenge them. Come on, let's go. We got to get ready. Clean up the mess that you just made. Put your clothes on. Do your homework. Do your chores. Much of parenting is challenging. Putting before a child a preferred future. This is what we're going for. We don't have it yet. Okay, challenge is you're challenging someone to do what they have not yet done. But then encouragement is what a person needs to figure out whether they're making any progress. And if for example, parenting becomes all challenge, your parents are always challenging you to do things, but never any encouragement. Encouragement is saying something good. Look, I appreciated what you did. I think you're on the right track. If a parent only gives challenge, then it's easy for children to grow up thinking that they can never please their parents. And a lot of us have been raised with that. A lot of challenge and very little encouragement. I read somewhere that it takes 7 words of encouragement to balance out 1 word of challenge. And that if we don't have that balance, if challenge gets out of balance, then people, well, one of 2 things happen. A small percentage of people who always get challenged will spend the rest of their lives trying to please people that cannot be pleased. They'll think that they can do it, but they never quite get there. But then the majority of people will just give up and say, well, I'm not even going to try. Why should I try? Because no matter what I do, it's not going to be good enough. So as I said, it's 7 words of encouragement to every 1 word of challenge to just balance out. And in fact, we should really go a little overboard on encouragement. Most people are suffering in life because they don't have enough encouragement. Bosses don't encourage enough. Teachers don't encourage enough. Coaches don't encourage enough. Pastors don't encourage enough. In some ways, it's easy to challenge and hard to encourage. But what I'm saying is we need both. Especially, in this semi-directive sort of manner. So why is encouragement and challenge needed? It would not be needed if all you did as a coach is to be totally directive when it comes to teaching your clients something. You would just teach it. So I'm going to teach you about parenting, and there you go. You know, I'm going to tell you how to do it, then you just go ahead and do it. Or I'm teaching you how to learn how to play the guitar. Here's the chord, now just do it, right? But when you try to teach something in a more semi-directive manner, you're relying to a great deal on your client being able to figure things out. And this requires challenge and encouragement. So let me try to show you how that works. When is challenge appropriate? When the client seeks to pursue a course of action that could hurt the client and others. So if you have a child and you're encouraging them to go outside and play, and they go outside and play next to the road, you challenge them to move towards the backyard because you don't want them accidentally running into the road and getting hit by a car. Now, I suppose, in some ways, the best way for anyone to learn is to experience the consequences of your decisions, whether they're good or bad. If you make a bad decision and you suffer for that bad decision, you're going to learn not to do that again. But some consequences are so severe. I mean, we don't want our kids being hit by a car in the road to learn not to play in the road. So that's why we challenge them. Sometimes. So, for example, I did some church consulting. A church went out to Washington State, and I spent about 7 weeks with this church, doing preaching, meeting with the leaders, and, doing questionnaires, trying to figure out where their church is at. I was there to sort of help them figure out who they are. They had a pastor for 26 years, and then he left. The church had been a church of 150 to 200 people. Over that 26 years, they went down to 50 people. And so, there were some issues, obviously, at least from my perspective. That's what I thought. They weren't always, it's interesting when you see a church in decline, often the church is not even aware of it. I mean, you'd think, well, how can you not be aware of it? I was looking around in some of the different rooms in the church, and I stumbled upon this room that had like 150 chairs in this room. I thought, well, how can you not know that you're declining when you put 150 chairs away in some room instead of being out there in the sanctuary? So anyway, I was doing this consulting and, meeting with leaders and so on. And after a couple of weeks, I met with who I thought was sort of the main leader. He's the one who called me in the first place to come out and see if I could help them in some ways. And he was saying, I think we're going to be okay. And he's a real positive kind of person. And I think, but we need a leader. I think we should start looking for a leader and call a leader. And I said, I looked at him and I said, if you called a pastor right now, he would come and you would kill him. What do you mean? Yeah, you would kill him. He would be full of vim and vigor, and he'd want to do this and do that and change things, and you guys wouldn't want to change anything. You don't know who you are. You don't know what your vision is. You have not taken ownership for what has happened in this church in the last 10, 15 years. And until you do that, inviting a capable person into this hornet's nest, this person's going to get stung. And, it took him, he was a little bit taken aback, but he accepted it and said, well, explain more about what you mean. What exactly is going on that would be a problem? I said, well, number one, you guys can't handle any change at all. Because I came in and I rearranged the chairs and I, you know, I was going to make hay. I wanted to, you know, my goal was to, so in some ways I was challenging them like crazy. Just with the seating arrangements, with the music. You know, their sanctuary was dead, as the space was dead as can be. And their welcome area was really alive. It was a big welcome area. So I had them sing the first verse of a song. And then I said, you know, in the Old Testament, they would come in singing into the temple. Let's go out into the welcome area and let's sing, you know, there, and then we'll come in. And I just wanted them to experience it. So we went out there and we sang, and, you know, the acoustics were so alive. You know, when you're in a dead space, acoustically speaking, the only person you can hear singing is yourself. You stop singing. And then because everyone stops singing even more, and the sound gets smaller and smaller and smaller. In an alive space, you start singing and you hear everybody else, and it sounds like you're a big choir. And so you sing even louder, then everyone else starts singing louder, and so the volume goes up 4, 5, 6 times. So I took them in there into this room, and they did that. And they were all like, it was the most amazing thing they had ever experienced. And I used that as a metaphor. I said, you know, you would never would have thought that just going in from one room to another would make that big a difference. I mean, it's just a small little change. It was a 20-foot walk. And that's the way it is with so many things in church. It doesn't seem like a big thing, but if you make that change, it will make a bigger difference than you could ever imagine. But change is all about challenge. Okay, change is that which you are not doing. So I'm challenging you to do something you're not doing. I'm challenging you to do something different. It is that something different going to work, or is it not going to work? Are we going to fail? See, that's what challenge is all about. Well, I was trying to challenge them, you know, to start using those change muscles before they called a pastor. Who, you know, who would try to change things and make things happen, and then they might not let him do it, and then he'd quit in discouragement. So when is challenge appropriate? Number two, when the client settles for a partial understanding of a concept and needs a push. So the same thing with this church consulting. They would understand partially what I was talking about, but they needed to be challenged to experience the whole thing. I mean, that was true for the lighting. It was true for their committees. I met with the leadership, and they had a leadership, and everyone on the leadership was a liaison leader to one of the committees, building and grounds, fellowship, social things, missions, finance, worship, education. So all the different committees of a church. The problem was, they had all these liaisons, but half the liaisons didn't have a committee that they liaisoned to. The committees didn't exist. There was no leader. There were no members. So all there was a liaison. And now the liaison was trying to do, for example, the fellowship committee. But this liaison was not chosen because of his interest or passion or giftedness in fellowship. He just happened to be elected to be on the board, and then they needed a liaison, so he got assigned the fellowship. And now you have someone who isn't particularly wired towards fellowship trying to make fellowship happen. And I said to them, you should just get rid of all these committees. Get rid of them. They don't exist anyway. It's better to have nothing than to have someone who's not really equipped for it, and then wait for someone who's equipped. Find somebody who's actually fits it. So they had a partial thing, you know, we need all these things, but they didn't know how this was going to go going forward. So then I had to challenge them and give them information about how things work. Number three. Challenge is appropriate when the client does not see the obvious poor practices that are contributing to a lot of suffering in the life of the client. So, I mean, when a church is in decline over a long period of time, they don't understand what they don't understand. They don't see what they don't see. I walked up to the pulpit to preach, and there's one light shining on my face on this side, and this light over here is shining to who knows where. Someone had moved it or something happened long ago, and it's been this way for years. So, you know, the pastor is on this side in the light, and this side is in the dark. And, you know, studies have been shown that it's hard to pay attention to somebody who's in the dark. Our eyes gravitate towards the light, the thing that is lit up the most. And it's fatiguing when it's not. So it's just a simple little thing, but it had been gone on for years, years and years and years. And no one noticed, no one changed, no one, they're just not paying attention. So new eyes come and you go, hey, you know, your lights are not lined up. It takes 5 minutes to change that. But see, I'm challenged. Let's get the lights right. They're online streaming. They would stream their services online. Today, people, even before they come to a new church, will look at the service online and evaluate the church based on that. Well, the singing, the piano was loud enough that you didn't need to mic the piano. But the problem was that the online service only picks up that which is mic'd. So the four people singing were mic'd and the piano was not. So all you hear is the four singers. And then there was no reverb whatsoever because the room was alive enough to not have to put, reverb, which is echo. Like every room has a natural echo to it that makes it seem lively, not like a library, not like a library where there's no echo. So they didn't have that on the feed that goes out. So you had four singers, no piano, and they sound horrible because there's no reverb. Reverb sort of makes voices blend together. Without it, it's very harsh. And so the online is very harsh. So and this was going on for years. See, you know, any person would look at it, anyone from the outside would look at it and go, this is horrible. But people get used to horrible over time. And they don't know what they don't know. And so you have to show, you know, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem. There's a lot of things that we need to fix around here. Okay? You got some drywall on the back wall. It's been that way for 3 years. This is what the pastor sees. Anyone walking out, this is what they see. It only take, 3 hours for someone to come in and fix that and do something. But there it sits, year after year. So challenge is appropriate when the client does not see the obvious poor practices that are contributing to a lot of suffering in the life of the client. Well, when is encouragement appropriate? When the client is filled with fear of failure and needs a lot of encouragement to be more active in figuring out a concept that is being taught. So in this church, there was a piano player who was hired now to run the whole music program, but didn't sing. So, but I think she could. So I'm challenging her, look, if you're in charge of the singing, you better learn how to sing and learn how to help people sing. She also could only play the notes. She needed sheet music that had all the notes for every song. And that's fine with hymns and so on, but with contemporary songs, the problem with that is contemporary songs a lot of times build. It starts off very soft, and then the drum comes in or a bass comes in, and then the piano does more and adds different things. But a lot of times this will be very simple, like just a chord. Contemporary music is very chord-centered. And piano players need to learn how to play chords. So I was challenging her. I said, well, you need to learn how to play chords. And someone like you, someone as talented as you, could learn in 2-3 hours. They said, here's three chords. I just showed her three chords. Here, let's try it. It's not hard. But she was resistant. She's resistant because, well, I've always played by notes. That's all I know. And it's like I'm not open to learning. So now I'm challenging. I'm saying if you're going to be the music director, You need to learn this. And if you're not willing to learn something that you could learn in 3 hours, then why would anybody take direction from you? Why would anyone learn from you if you're not willing to learn yourself? So, I mean, a pretty strong challenge. And, you know, I've yet to see what's going to happen. So when a client is filled with fear of failure, and maybe that's what it was, I'm going to fail. You know, whenever you're trying something new, it's something that you haven't done. You're comfortable with what you have done and what you already know, and you want to stick with it. And so we all need that little bit of a challenge to move towards that which we've never done before, and we need to get over that fear of failure. So in order to do that, we need a challenge, but in order to get over the fear, we need encouragement. That's why I kept saying to her, look, you can do this. I know you can. I know how talented you are by the music that you play. And chords is just, in some ways, you're playing all these notes. It's way more complicated than chords. Chords are very simple. It's just like learning and memorizing, you know, the A chord, and then the C chord, and then the D chord, and the G chord. You know, and then the A minor and a few others. You know, in 3 hours, you could memorize like four chords where you'd never have to look at the notes again, and you'd have these four chords down, and you could play 100 different songs. I know you can do this. And then as she was trying and, you know, stumbling a little bit, I'm like, yeah, see, you're getting it already. We haven't even worked on it for 20 minutes, and you're already good at it. So it's letting this person know that they're on the right track, that they can do it, and as they try, that they're making some progress. Number two, when a client is on the right track to figuring something out. Okay, I guess I just said that. How do we know we're on the right track to figuring, you know, our world is filled with a lot of challenge, but how do you know when you're on the right track? Now, sometimes you know you're on the right track because, you know, good things happen. But a lot of times you don't know, at least in the beginning phases of something, because you're not quite good enough for any positive feedback somewhere, you know, to just happen naturally. So we need someone to say, I think you're doing it right. You're on the right track. You haven't figured it all out, but you're getting there. And we all need to hear that. I think this is really part of all the coaching that you do, even the not totally non-directive. You know, someone knows what, you know, they figured out what they want to do. They figure out, you know, the plan that they want to follow. And then when they meet with you again and they explain what they've done, they need to hear a coach say, good job. Good job. You know, you said that you were going to do this last week and you did it. That's no small thing. People make plans, they say they're going to do things, and then they don't follow through. But you followed through. You're a follower, follow-thrower. See, that's the kind of thing that you want your client to get a feeling of. You know, I am a follow-thrower. I can do these things. So this whole arena of challenge and encouragement, it's probably just universal with dealing with people at all. If you want to influence, if you want to have an effect on someone's life, whether it's directive, non-directive, semi-directive, it doesn't really matter. I think these things are necessary. Challenge and encouragement. And some people actually need more challenge than encouragement. I'm like that. If you want to encourage me, the best way to encourage me is to challenge me, because I respond well to challenge. I'm of Dutch background, and Dutch people are, you know, known for challenge, and they're also known for very little encouragement. So us Dutch people can get by with very little encouragement. But we can't get by without challenge. Now, other of you, maybe it's the reverse, that you don't need a whole lot of challenge, but what you need is encouragement. And encouragement is almost like challenge. When you get encouraged, then you try even more, which is, you know, what challenge does. So today, as you go out today, I want you to be aware of all the interactions that you have and try to throw a little challenge and encouragement. See how many times you can do that in all the different interactions that you have today. All right, we'll see you again next time.